Well, when did you and other key studio personnel really become aware of the magnitude of the production of My Fair Lady that was planned?
Oh, now you're bringing up the love of my life. Think of all the pictures that I've been associated with in any way at all. My Fair Lady was the greatest joy. As to when was I impressed with the magnitude of it, I think right from the very inception. It was such a great success on the stage, ran for so many years in New York. It was in the planning stage for a long time at the studio. In any event, it was a source of great enjoyment to me personally to work on it. To me, this had to be the acme of perfection, you know. I wanted everything absolutely tops. And I picked the best crew that I could find for the job. The stage mixer was Francis Shide, a very good friend of mine, and a boy with great show sense. Rex Harrison did a good job on the pre-scoring thing. Wilfred Hyde White was very, very funny in the whole pre-scoring operation. Great sense of humor and a real charming old gentleman. And when he and Rex were working together in the vocal booth, which is a temporary structure put up to separate them from the orchestra on the stage, it was a lot of fun to hear the dialogue going on between these two Englishmen, Rex Harrison and Wilfred Hyde White. Rex Harrison was very fussy about the costume that he wore, although it was a simple suit. But he was fussy about the material. He was fussy about the material the hat was made of. And everything seemed to be everybody striving for ultimate perfection and striving for a flawless setting for everything concerned with My Fair Lady. When the sets were built, particularly Henry Higgins' studio, which has a metal stairway in it, had a metal stairway and a balcony, and on the balcony is his stack of books, library material. First of all, Rex said he had done this show so many times that he couldn't possibly conform to a playback, and he absolutely refused to perform to a playback and become some kind of automatic device mouthing in sync. He said he never did a show twice alike. He did it as he felt it. And he was going to do the movie the same way.
Well, excuse me, but were you aware of this when you were doing the pre-recording? He didn't wait till you started shooting, or did he?
Almost. We're almost ready to go.
Had he done any pre-recording?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's...
The pre-recording was all done. Fortunately, in the pre-recording, we had enough isolation between the voice and the orchestra that we had clean orchestrations to work with. The first impulse we had was to play a low playback on the set and use a standard microphone and just pick him up live on the stage. Okay. Well, now we come to the sets, and in this particular set, where he did several numbers, there was no way of photographing Rex Harrison on that balcony and coming down the stairway without getting a microphone and a camera. And if you stayed far enough away, you couldn't get a playback low enough that you wouldn't pick it up, you know. So, what to do? Well, I had seen on television some very successful work that had been done and could only have been done by using radio microphones, and this was the only obvious solution. So anyway, as you can see, there was some prior experience with radio microphones, but not in a big musical movie. I'm sure that nobody had ever attempted or even thought of using radio microphones to do a big musical, particularly of the caliber of My Fair Lady, because of the hazard that existed
with radio microphones at that time of picking up extraneous material from other sources, radio sources outside the studio, and picking up a lot of hash and background garbage, so to speak, that cluttered up the track. In order to prove a point, we had to borrow radio microphone equipment from one of the broadcast stations. As soon as we got a hold of that, I made a test recording on our scoring stage with Rex to determine how low he could stand the playback, work with the playback, and also to see if he was satisfied with the quality that would be finally recorded. In order to hide, the problem came as to how to hide a microphone. The small, very, very small microphones now used, which are about the size of a little fingernail, put out by Sony, wonderful microphones, condenser microphones, very, very small, they were not available. And the microphone that was used was rather bulky and a little difficult to hide. We presented this problem to the wardrobe department and to Rex, because he was all enthused about this preliminary test that we made. We put it together with the original recording. We took the voice track that we had from the radio microphone and synced it up with the original scored track and played it back for him. And he thought it was the greatest invention, the greatest miracle that ever happened, because he suddenly became completely free of any mouthing, any listening to a playback of himself and trying to duplicate what he'd done on somebody else's scoring stage, and gave him complete freedom of action so that he could perform as he felt like it, which he did. He was tremendously excited, tremendously enthused. He said, "George, if there's anything I can do with it, let me know and I will do anything you want to make this thing work." One thing that we were involved in was hiding the microphones, I said. And most of the time, fortunately, Rex wore an English tweed suit and the Henry Higgins hat and a tie, of course. And they got a very, very coarse knit tie that was completely transparent to sound. A normal tie, if you put a microphone underneath it, it's like putting a muffler over the top of a microphone. It stops all the highs from coming through, and the quality's bad. So there we got cooperation from the wardrobe department, and Rex was very patient about being rigged with this stuff on the set, because he thought, this is God's gift to Rex Harrison, you know. This whole solution established a great friendship between Rex Harrison and myself. One number in particular that Rex was so absolutely delighted was "I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face." Not so much the long walk down the street, that was fine, but when he got to the door and he does the part of the song where he says, "I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face," and he got very low, and he said he really felt that. He said he thought he did that number better than any time he'd ever done it on the stage. And because we had it, and he said he could never in all of his life have done that to playback. No. Because he was emotionally in the mood for it, and we were very lucky that we got it without having to redo it on account of extraneous noises or anything of that kind. We got a lucky break from God in that he kept all extraneous radio signals under control. One great problem that came up was after the grand ball, where Audrey becomes the great lady, and they go back to Rex's house, and he and I, White, or he sings, "By Jove, You Did It." Now, Rex wore a dress suit with a white stiff shirt. Where did he put the microphone? You cannot wear a tie, a white tie. And his white tie and tails, what he wore. But when he left the ball, he put on a cloak before he goes out there. When he finally sees her in a gorgeous gown and all dressed, and he steals a sip of port to bolster his courage, he has a black cloak that he puts on and a white silk scarf around his neck. When he left the ballroom to go back, he wore the same cape and the white silk scarf. When he got into his house, he threw off the cape, but you'll notice he never took off the white silk scarf until that number was over. The microphone was hidden in it. And that worked out. Again, they got a special white silk scarf that was a loosely woven material and went to great pains to hide the microphone in that scarf so that he did that whole number live with the radio mic. And then he finally said, "By Jove, you did it." And he throws himself down into the chair and laughs and kicks off his shoes. Then he takes off the scarf and throws it away. By this time, the microphone had been removed.
Yeah. Well, I guess the climax of this production of this picture was winning the Academy Award.
Oh, yes. Of course, that's always a great thrill. I was very proud of it, of course. The Oscar was presented by two very charming people. Now, the lady's name is Claudia Cardinale. Very beautiful girl. And Steve McQueen. I happen to have a still picture of it, which goes into my prize collection, of course. That's the one I really treasure.